You just get. They walk the Highlands of Scotland. Just got back.
And then carried off by Rangers.
It was terrible. But only the first few minutes. So, where are we up to?
The double dots on the bottom.
The double dots on the bottom. So today's dot is Daf Kufav Gimel. And we're holding on Daf Kufav Beis Amud Beis at the two dots. So in the Mishnah, we were told that Noitel Adam Kurnis Vafatzeya Teregozim. You're allowed to take a hammer. Certainly a hammer seems like something you don't usually use for smashing nuts, you know, unless you're Rube Goldberg or somebody, but normally this is not the tashmish. So does this mean necessarily that any type of kli, even something that's generally not to be used on Shabbos, which is called the kli shemalachto le'isur, I mean, a hammer is usually used for banging a nail, it's not for crushing nuts. Implication then might be that as long as the usage is a mutter usage on Shabbos, we basically don't care about the kli, and mukta disappears. That's what it seems to be saying. Omer Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda wants to disabuse us of that notion. And he says, let's not make a mistake about this. When it says kurnis, it means a nut hammer, of course. You all have nut hammers in your house. A nut hammer, actually for walnuts and so on, they have these little... So a nut hammer you can use to crack open nuts, but you certainly can't take a sledgehammer to crack open nuts. For heck, that would be like using nuclear energy to knock down a building or a city. Anyway. So what does this tell us? That according to Rabbi Yehuda, it can't possibly mean a hammer that's used for hammering in nails, because that's not used usually for nuts. In which case, to take it and to be koveya usage for tzorach gufo does not mean, as it sounds on the surface, for the need of itself, which you think would mean, let's say, it's outdoors and it's raining on it and so on. It means for a tzorach, which is its own use, own goof is used, needed for. Doesn't mean needed for its goof. That's called the tzorach atzmo. If you want it for itself, let's say it's in the rain, you want to move it now indoors, it's a hammer in the rain, that would not be called the tzorach gufo. Okay, so here the concept of the tzorach gufo is a little bit, the construction is a little bit unclear. Because it means a tzorach which is needed, its goof is needed for, right? So you would say it gufo litzorach is more the way we would have said. So in other words, he's saying tzorach gufo remains usher on a klisha malach to the yisr. Or Malay Rava, well, how far are you going to take this? The next case in the Mishnah, for instance, was talking about a rechet and a malgez lateta lev lakatan. I mean, these are awfully big things. I mean, there's certainly no such thing as a pitchfork that's made for babies. I mean, you know, unless they're already in hell. But generally speaking, you don't use pitchforks on babies. Okay. So what are you going to say what that's all about? I mean, mimi achte le lekatan. You're telling me that there's a particular thing. You're saying that is used for a katan. I mean, what do we use them for? If you got too many kids in the house, you pick them up and throw them onto their shelves or. I mean, it makes no sense. It's not the type of kli that's usable for, really, that you make for a katan. Therefore, says Rabbi, I believe that the meaning is kipshuto. And when it says kurnis, it means any type of hammer, even a kurnis shel napachim. You want to take a sledgehammer, use a sledgehammer to break open your nuts, the fatzea ba'at ha'gozim, it's mutter. In which case, what the Mishnah is telling us, says Rabbi, is exactly what Rabbi Yehuda attempted to avoid, namely, that in fact you could take any kli at all, even something that is generally used for things asr on Shabbos, as long as the usage of this kli is leheter, then it would be okay. Now obviously this doesn't mean taking something which isn't a kli, which is a much greater level of mukta. I mean, we have a mukta mahmat gufo, which means that this is just a rock. You can't go and pick up a rock unless this rock was miyuchad before Shabbos for pitzua egozi. But a kli, as we saw earlier, once something is a kli, it enters into a completely new realm in which the tashmish becomes the defining element that created the muktzah. Not its lack of tashmish, but rather the specificity of the tashmish. And therefore, as long as it's open to other usages, we didn't answer, according to Rava. And this is, of course, how we paskin, that you're allowed to use a kli shema lav to l'yisr. Now, there are other issues, which we've seen earlier, which are things like mi'uz, which we're not talking about over here. We don't know how that stands in the hierarchy of muktzah yet. Or where the usage is so specific that you would not usually want to use it for anything else at all. We just turned it on. It should work eventually, I hope. Has this been doing anything? It's just been getting weaker and weaker. Yeah. So that we're not talking about. In other words, if we have a kli whose usage is very, very specific and delicate, then we already saw there's another concept of muktzah, and there it's called miyachid le'makom. You don't want it to be used for anything else. That's not what we're talking about over here. Eisvei Abaya l'Rabba. Abaya asked Rabba, who claims that it would be mutter to use something which is usually set aside for an osur use on Shabbos. Again, it's very important to remember the words correctly. We use these technical terms instead of having to explain it each time. A kli shemalachto le'isr, something which is normally used to do an object of work that isn't done on Shabbos. So according to you, Rabba, who claims that a kli shemalachto le'isr can be used for heter, here it says, Miduka, im yesh ba shum metaltalin ota, v'im lav ein metaltalin ota. You have a mortar. And there's some crushed garlic that was left in this mortar. So now I'm using the mortar as a kli for the shum. In that case, mitzaltalin ota, you would be allowed to move it on Shabbos. But im lav, ein mitzaltalin ota. If not for the fact that it had some shum left, you can't move it at all. Ein mitzaltalin ota seems to mean for any purposes. In other words, so I want to turn this mortar upside down, and I want to sit on it. That shouldn't be good, according to this. It says, Ein mitzaltalin ota ela. So in other words, it's disallowing usages that are even heter gomer. Obviously, to sit on something is heter gomer, but I can't move it in order to sit on it. Doesn't mean you can't sit on it if it's upside down. So you can't move it to sit on it. So Ein mitzaltalin ota. Now, the truth is, as we'll see later on, at this moment, we already have an answer in our minds. Because the Ein mitzaltalin ota, remember, there are various levels of tiltul. In other words, just like there's various levels of muktzah in terms of kli shemalachto leheter, kli shemalachto leyisr, kli which is muktzah machlof svisar and kis, or something which is bechlal not a kli, and there's more, I'm saying etal, but among what we've discussed so far, there's four different levels, and really we've seen already six different levels of muktzah. There's also different levels of moving. So we can have the usage of a kli for its normal use. Take a plate to put something in a plate. And we'll see whether that sounds a little silly, but we'll see it's not silly at all. That there is, in fact, a mandi omar, and even halacha today, according to many, many shitas, you cannot move a kli just for the heck of it. But you can't just pick up a kli and, you know, look at it, turn it around, and throw it on Shabbos. Even your cup. Yeah, exactly. So in other words, it's only tzarev that you can move a kli for. So let's talk about tzarev, which is heter, and you use it for its heter. That's the lowest problem level. Next problem level is that you have something which is usually used here for iser, and now you want to use it for something which is completely heter. But we also have, possibly in between, again, we haven't determined the hierarchy, but we also have the question, could you move something which is mutter to move, but not for any usage, but to keep it out of the ring? Lutzorach atzmo. The technical term in the Gemara being mechamalatzel. You want to get it out of the heat, which is damaging it. Now, it's not clear that they were ever mater mechamalatzel. So we did have an answer right here. We could have said that when it says ein mitzaltalin ota, doesn't mean ein mitzaltalin ota to sit on it. It means ein mitzaltalin ota l'tzarech atzmo, to help the kli. Now, of course, there's another usage which is called Letzorach Mikomot. Letzorach Mikomot is definitely a less problematic usage than Mechama Letzel. I need the place where this is, I need to move it out. Why would you say that it's a less problematic usage to move something Letzorach Mikomot than Mechama Letzel? What's your svara?
More purpose in my needs. There's more of a purpose in addressing my needs as opposed to my object's needs. I may have to protect my property.
So what's wrong with protecting your property?
That helped my Shabbos activity. If I need it with Sarah Makoma, it means there's something in my Shabbos activity that needs a response.
Well, one you're doing for
possibility.
It. One you're doing for it, the other one you're doing for you.
Yeah, I think that's what I was saying, essentially. Right? Saying the same thing. Unless. Any other distinctions?
But here it was specifically for the Kli. As many if that Kli was there were another Kli was there. I mean, we're not relating to this Kli, we're relating to the place and not to the Kli. So therefore the Kli just happens to be there. But if somebody else would have been there, we would have also moved it.
You're saying it's not really a usage at all of the Kli. So the Kli remains okay.
Or you could also say, look, I need the Kli, I need it to be gone.
I need it to be gone. We always view as though it's like we have the same concept. I'm, you know, Shane, you know, the sort of goof. There's also an afkamina. There's also an afkamina, as Barnea just brought up, immediacy. Immediacy. This is not a real use at all. I have no immediate use whatsoever because right now nothing's happening. I just don't want it ultimately to be hurt. Okay, these are all possible differences, but the fact is that we'll see clearly in the order of priorities of movement. The Mechama Letzel is of the lowest, almost the lowest, I mean the very lowest is Shalom L'Shum Tzar, but almost the lowest level of need is called Mechama Letzel, that would be Deich HaMukhs, even though you may feel it's a very important need in terms of your wallet, but in terms of the Shabbos hierarchy, it's a lower level. Okay. So our answer could easily have been that when it says Ein Metatalinota means Ein Metatalinota Mechama Letzel, not Ein Metatalinota at all. But for some reason, Rabbi doesn't want to give this answer. Tosfos explains later on that the lashon to him of ein metatalinota just sounds like for any purpose at all, because otherwise he should have made a distinction. So therefore, he says amarle, and this is important because it introduces a new shita. We've mentioned the shita earlier. Amarle hamani Rabbi Nechemya gida amar ein kli nital elo letzorach tashmisha. This shita represents a very big chumrah, Rabbi Nechemya's chumrah. He holds that you can never use a Kli on Shabbos unless it is its primary usage. And since, I mean, according to him, clearly, you couldn't use a hammer to crack a nut, because that's not its primary usage. Forget about the question of whether it's Isser or Heter. Even a Kli Shemalach Heter could only be used for its primary usage. So you wouldn't even be allowed to take a glass and bang a nut open with it, because that's not its primary usage. So he strongly expands our concept of muktzah.
We're assuming that before Shabbos he didn't say anything.
Correct. It wasn't miyuchad for any other use.
If he would have,
we don't have evidence about it. Rabbi Nechemya would allow an artificial definition of a usage before Shabbos. We don't know. Right now, all he's saying is that the concept of muktzah includes the moving of a kli for anything but its primary purpose.
And he's worried about kind of doing lawful with it, that it's his primary concern.
Well, we'll see that there was muktzah was actually a social reaction to the breakdown in Shmirat Shabbat at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, where the as is recorded in the Navi, there was a tremendous amount of open chilul Shabbos when they came back to Yehuda, that people had simply forgotten many halachos of Shabbos. They were doing business on Shabbos and transporting goods, big transport labors on Shabbos, setting up the shuk and so on. So they had a very strong reaction to prevent any type of movement of things on Shabbos, as we'll see, and then gradually relaxed the chumras of muktzah. The question is, how relaxed did they get? We'll see. We're going to discuss all this later. So far, okay, we've got now three different shitas that we've seen. The most chumra is Rabbi Nechemya, you can only use something for its primary purpose, even if it's blakta l'heter. The next most chumra is Rabbi Yehuda. This, of course, is not to be put in the same context as Rabbi Nechemya. He's a Tana reviewer, he's an Amir. But I'm saying so far that we've met, we haven't seen the Tanoic basis for this. But Rav Yehuda's Shita over here is that the meaning of our Mishnah is that you can use a kli shemalachto leheter for its heter, but you can't use a kli shemalachto leyeser, even letzorech gufo. And then we have Rabbo, what's a kli shemalachto leyeser is usable letzorech gufo, as long as obviously it's a malacha shel heter. So, asks the Gemara, Esrei, v'shavim she'im katzav alav basar she'asur letatalo. The truth is, there's no reason to leave out what's in the parentheses, other than it's being clear from the Rishonim that it didn't appear in our Gemara and that it was meant to be understood. So if the printer put it in, there's no reason for us not to use it. And there is a Bachlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about Beit Shammai saying, Ein notina ta'ali lekatzev alav basar, uBeit Hillel matiri. So here we're talking about a Pesach, and we want to use it for butchering meat. So we're going to provide a strong back for cutting something, or we want to bang out the meat, but it's certainly not the primary usage of the pestle, which is normally used for crushing, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to use it. Beit Hillel is matir. This is talking about on Yom Tov, by the way. V'shavim she'im katzav alav basar she'asur letatalo. Everybody is moda, both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that if Lamaisa, you used it and you cut meat on it, that doesn't mean that now it's mutter after you did it, because it remains a kli shemalachta liyisr, because it's usually used for crushing in a way that's similar to tchina, to be tochin, and tochin is also. Now, why would it be that there would be a question over here, Bichlal, why can't you use it now on something that is heter? It's saying over here, you definitely can't use it. So what's the pshat? Sober l'shinri, like Rabbi Nechemia. So he thought that maybe over here this is also a question that would be going like Rabbi Nechemia, who holds, since that's not its primary usage, its primary usage is malachta liyisr, so you can't use it for anything else. And then he realized that there's another solution. After hearing the extent at which we're willing to extend the idea of a muktzimachus chisaron kis. Because Muktzimachus Chisaron Kis obviously has got an awful wide range. I mean, how much Muktzimachus Chisaron Kis? I mean, look, clearly if you're a sheikhet and you've got a very expensive shechita knife that you worked a few hours on smoothing, you certainly don't want to use that to cut your challah on Shabbos. I understand that that's Muktzimachus Chisaron Kis. Okay. But how about, I mean, if you've got something which is, let's say, you've got a hammer that you use for hammering out gold, or a gold worker. Well, it's delicate work. On the other hand, I mean, if I use the hammer for something else, it's the easiest thing in the world to smooth the hammer. Again, I just bang it a few times on my, on the anvil like we had before. That was the norm. You banged on an anvil. We were even mechayev according to my mind during the mission. No, no, how? So, I mean, the question is to what extent? And then there's all kinds of areas in the middle. So to what extent would we say that somebody's makbid? I mean, certainly makbid, you don't want your kids to use. Does that mean makbid, you shouldn't use it for any other malach? So here it says, that's why, and the reason I was marked in that, is that's why it's a big makhlok is Rishonim. What exactly is the meaning of Sifri Zairi Missouri? Because the specific use is important, since what we're talking about over here is a definition of a range of activities. We need to very clearly define the range. There's three major shitas as to what these things are. So according to Tosfos, what we're talking about over here is an ironing press. And these are the parts that are used. You have the upper, the lower, and then the thing that you hold it down. Now, over there, if there's the slightest pagam in the press, it's going to show up in your suit. I mean, obviously, you want to be very mock-fit. You're not going to put something on, you're going to write something on that and then have everybody's pants have your John Hancock on it. You know, so that's considered to be strongly, that's a dove that would strongly be chisaron kiss. There are other extremes of less hakpada. So some learn that it's talking about the kovet elyon and the kovet tachton of a weaver. Rashi brings such a pshat from his rabbeim. There's another pshat that it's talking about a dyer who would hold things in to dip it into the dye vat. So it has to be perfectly straight, because otherwise it will end up with too much dye in one place. But whatever, the point is over here that these are kalim that are not all that expensive, but they're used for a particular purpose. You wouldn't want to ruin them, necessarily. And therefore, once I know that a makbet on that level, to call it mukh shmakbet zechzorin kiss, and we call that, remember all the time, miyachid lehu makom, from miyachid lehu makom, here too I could easily say a mortar and a pestle, miyachid lehu makom, and that's the reason that we don't use it on Shabbos, even letzorech gufo, but ein achinami, says Rabba, if it hadn't been for that additional problem of chisaron kiss, I would have used it, even though it's a kli shemalachul yisra, there never would have been a problem b'chlal with Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Itmar Chia Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kurner Shel Zahavim. Well, look at that, just exactly what we were talking about before, amazing. A gold worker's hammer, so the gold worker's hammer, again, that case also, we were talking about a Kurner Shel Zahavim Shaninu. And the shaila is, what do we mean in our Mishnah to be matir? I mean, we talked about now we're gonna use something for cracking a nut and so on. So the question is, how far would we go? Hakudah Shel Zahavim is certainly makbid on it a little bit, but no. If it gets a bang in it because you used it on a nut, you could smooth it out on your anvil. That's what we were talking about over here in our Mishnah, even though there's some type of hakpada. So in other words, he's taking it even a step beyond Rabbah, correct? Rabbah said you use a sledgehammer. Obviously, I don't care much about this. Nothing's going to happen to my sledgehammer to use it on a walnut. He's saying you can even use a kurnish ozavim, even though it may well make a little dent in your hammer. You don't care, because it's repairable. Reb Shammah bar Abba Amar, even a kurnish of basamim, Shanino. A cornice of a basam needs an extremely clean type of hammer surface because any kind of impurity that's on the hammer can easily affect its perfume. It's very, very sensitive to impurities. And therefore, you wouldn't want to use it for anything else. So the man yomish of basamim, which is the closest that you might get to setting it aside and not wanting to use it, Kolshkin is Zavim. He's certainly going to say, if it's a gold worker, he's not Makbet. Man Yomishel Zavim, Avodibit Basamim Kapit Alayim. The one who says that the Mishnah is using even a gold worker's hammer on a nut, but he would not go so far as to say, even a perfumery hammer, that's already Makbet Alayim. So here we see a little bit of the breadth of Mukhtar Makbet Chisaron Kiss. Continues the Mishnah, Zakush Vesakarkar, so these are various pointed kalim, and it says over there you could use them if you want to litchovbo. You want to use them as a poker to get something out of an area that's hard to reach, a fruit or something. Tanarabana, paga shetamna beteven. If you have an unripe fig, and you put that fig inside of teven, that keeps it warm and makes it ripe. Something like we do for our esrogim with the apples. And the tevin is definitely muktzah because tevin was generally used for making cement. So it's set aside for binyan. Or a charara, you have a piece of bread, shetamna b'gechalim, and it had been baking. It was one of those, you know, coal-baked breads. And you now need to get it out from between the dead coals. So in the gulem miktzata mutana tatala, if some of it is exposed, you just pick it up, then it's okay. Vimlava sula tatala, but how are you going to get to it if it's under the tevin? How are you going to get to your paga? If it's under the coals, how are you going to get to the bread? So then he wouldn't be allowed to take it because you're moving the coals. Rabbi Elizabeth said, Dayom, why? What's the problem? Tochim bakusha bakarkar, which is the case, seems to be the case in our Mishnah. Vahin minaharot mealehem. If once you pick them up, then the coals or the teven will drop off the side, and you're not moving it directly, you're moving it minatzad, and apparently that's not a problem. Lameimra, do you say, and Rav Nachman says, look, Rav Elizabeth Latoy, that's precisely how we paskin. It's okay to poke into it and then pick it up, even though that moves along the edge, will move the coals. Obviously, they're not burning coals. So Lameimra, the sober of Nachman, Tiltu Benatzad, Lavshmei Tiltu, you're telling me that according to Rav Nachman, you're allowed to move something that's mukta, as long as you don't move it directly. You're pulling something, and Mamela, this other thing moves. Problem is, Rav Nachman was the author of the Shita, who says exactly the opposite. Hai pugla, milamala lamata shor, yimata lamala osir. Remember we had a case earlier of a radish, where you put the radish into the dirt, not in order for, it's already picked, you put it there in order to remain cool and fresh, damp, moist. Now, if you put the radish in with the sharp end pointing down, says Rav Nachman, you can pick up the radish as long as some of it's exposed, because you won't move anything. But if you got the sharp end pointing up, you want to pick it up by the sharp end, when you pull it out, you're going to be moving dirt. That you can't do. So apparently, and clearly that's minatzad, all I'm doing is pulling up my radish, and you're saying I'm not allowed to do that. And it says the Gemara, Hadabe Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman has charata from that. And Tosus explains why we say it's from that and not from this. We have other evidence that Rav Nachman would have had charot. We have kashas on the pugla. So he had charata from the tsnon, it's talking about a radish, and he was allowed to poke something and pull it up out of mukta, as long as you don't move the mukta stuff directly with your hand. Then we had a case of a sewing needle, Machal shel yadli tobosa kotz, to take out a splinter with a sewing needle. Shalak le'rova b'reda rabbi le'rav Yosef, ilamdenu rabbeinu, machat shenitel charara o k'tza, mahu. Are you allowed to use a needle that is missing either its hole or its point on Shabbos? Amalei, well, our Mishnah says, a machat shel yad can be moved to take out a splinter. Now last I heard, a splinter really doesn't care whether it's removed by a needle that has a place for thread in it, or doesn't have a place for a thread in it. The needle is a disaster for that coach in either case, and therefore, why would it make a difference if it has a place for thread? So, the coach couldn't care less about the neck, right? Coach only cares about the point. So we ask on this psak, Reb Yosef's psak, that it says over here that if a machat is missing its hole, that it's tahor. Omer Abaye, what gives you the right to ask from Tuma on Shabbos? Of course, throughout the Masechta, we've been doing that, right? So Tuma on Shabbos Karamisa. Well, what the heck is the comparison of the dinim of Tuma Kalim, Lagabi Tuma, to the usage of a kli on Shabbos? Tuma kli ma'aseh b'ina. Lenin Shabbos, meaning the chosi b'ina. I mean, there's a completely different definition, right? I mean, a kli legabe tuma is a kli for which its purpose, it exists for its purpose. That's what makes it a kli. Not that I could use it the way I would use a rock on the ground. I could use a rock on the ground as a hammer. That doesn't make it a hammer. But when it comes to Shabbos, as long as it has a use, so then it's not muksi, but if it's not, it's particular, it was manufactured for, there's no comparison. And therefore, all I need is me to defuzzy, something that's usable. Is this needle usable to take out a coat? Perfectly usable. And on amichazim, a mishkel about coat. Since it's usable, it would have a din of a kli l'gabe Shabbos. What's the comparison? On my Ravolini, what's the comparison? Sex a comparison. Manda kamosim, shaper kamosim. It's an excellent question. In fact, the two issues are fundamentally interconnected. If something is no longer considered to be a kli, legabe tuma, that means that it has lost its yichud of use. Because if it were still usable, we had like a bowl that has a hole in it. But it's not a hole that's big enough necessarily to let pomegranates escape. So it would still be usable. It would be a kli legabe tuma too. Since it's no longer usable, it's not considered to be something that people are thinking about in terms of use. Once they're not thinking about it in terms of use, it becomes a muktzeh. That's the definition of muktzeh, not thought about in terms of use. So I don't understand what you're saying. You're telling me that people keep around broken sewing needles in their house because they need them in case the kids get a splinter. And that's ridiculous. Yes. So we ask now for the following. Machat bein nekuva bein shenu eina nekuva mutar letaltala b'shabbat v'lo amru nekuva ela le'inyin tumah b'vad. What is Rava talking about? It's the Farish of Brisa that says that if you have a machat without a nekev in it, then indeed legabi tumah it's not a kli, but legabi Shabbos it is a kli. So here we see that Abaya's approach was correct, and that when it comes to tumah we have different standards. Tirgama Abaya, but the Rava wasn't present to answer the question himself. But Abaya said, look, I mean, I'll stand in Rava's place for a minute and I'll tell you what he would have said. What he would have said is that this is irrelevant. This is not talking about a broken needle. A broken needle, Rava would have said, is indeed useless people throw in the garbage. It's junk. It's talking about over here an uncompleted needle. In other words, the manufacturer first cuts, you know how you make a needle, you first take wire, you cut the wire, and then you stamp a hole in it. And it hasn't been stamped yet. Fine. So it's talking basically about gourmet kalim. You don't throw out gourmet kalim. At one point or another you complete it, or you can decide in your mind to use it. So then it's a completely different issue. The gourmet askina, since since you could at any point decide to use this wire, cut wire, as a needle for removal of a coat, in a case where you already had a needle, now it broke. So if it broke, or the point is missing, you throw that in the junk pile, you don't keep it around. Therefore, Rava would say there's no comparison between the two cases. You could have an unholed needle, but it's still not grutaot, it's not junk, it just isn't completed. Or you can have a broken needle. Rava would claim that a broken needle, since it loses its shame legabe tumah, is no longer kli legabe shabbos, because why does it use its shame legabe tumah? Because people don't think about it as useful any longer. If it's not useful, then it's a muktzeh.
Well, it's giving you the possibility that you might want to use a needle specifically for taking out splinters.
Because Abaya does. That's why Abaya argues. And he says the fact that somebody may keep the needle around doesn't mean that it's not a broken needle, agave tuma. Rava says, but Monashav, it's a broken needle, agave tuma, means that you don't see it as being useful. If you don't see it as being useful, then it's grutaot.
Don't we call a needle without a hole in it a kim?
You're not claiming that a rose is a rose is a rose, I hope.
No, just trying to differentiate between the broken.
Well, and tell me, in your house, do you keep broken needles around to use as pins?
No.
Okay, there you go.
Because you buy a pin.
Right.
A pin has to have a head, or else it's going to go all the way to the head.
Asuve yanuka. Now, the question over here is, are you allowed to... remember we had before the case of the Fufa Yanuka. They used to believe that unless you save that infant and wrapped it quickly in something that would keep it tight,
swaddling,
you'd end up with a child that would grow up looking like a spider. You know, just look at those infants. They don't know what to do with their hands and feet. And so they swaddled the poor kids. Right? But this Tosu says is beyond swaddling. This is Asuvi Yanuka, is where there's actually a dislocated organ, or at least they felt it must be dislocated and putting it back in place. But anyway, Asuba Yanuka, Rav Nachman holds it's Osir, Rav Sheshet holds it's Mutter. Now, we'll see how this is Nogea, the Derech of Tikkun of a thing. So Rav Sheshet says it's Mutter. Rav Nachman says, look, I'll prove to you that it's Osir. Omer Rav Nachman, the basis of my idea over here is that it says ein osin afek toizin b'Shabbat, that you're not allowed to use an emetic on Shabbos. They used emetics, of course, in the good old Roman fashion to have room for another state. So So you can't do that on Shabbos. Now, apparently, the reason you can't do it is because it's similar to tikkun. No, it's certainly not a refuah. I mean, I'm not using this emetic to get poison out of my stomach. I just want to eat another steak. But because it's similar, says Reb Nachman, to tikkunei gavra, that means that there was a gezeira even on something like an effectoizin, in which case there should certainly be a takana not to fix up the infant's organs. Even though it's tikkun. Reb Shesha says, well, it's no comparison. Asam lav urche. It's not the norm that the way that you eat is to take an emetic. Halcha urche. Over here, it's like, what are you doing? This is the way that you feed a child? You're allowed to feed a child? You're going to say, it's considered to be tikkun gavra because when you feed them, they live. I mean, that's not called tikkun. That's simply called living. It's the way that you live. So over here, doing that to an infant is simply the way that a child is normally cared for. Ah, and here's why we bring it here. Omer Pshesh Minah Minallah, I can prove it to you. Because the Mishnah in Shabbos says, which just happens to be our Mishnah, that machat shel yad can be used litol ba'et hakotz. You're allowed to take out a splinter on Shabbos. And why are you allowed to take a splinter out on Shabbos? Must be that there's no problem of an iser of tikkunei gavra. Otherwise you'll say, look, this is making the person more shalem.
That's
7 needle. Our Mishnah is the case we've been talking about. Yeah. Reb Nachman says, well, no, it's not the same. Hatam pakid. The question of the coats. The coats has its own separate identity. It's pakid in and of itself. When I'm taking out that coats, it's true, I'm leaving the person in better shape. But I'm not dealing with the person. Bashenke, when I'm dealing with the yanuka, I'm dealing with the person. I'm fixing up the child. Fixing up the child is entirely a different issue. Okay, the truth is that this distinction between something that is in a thing and something that's on a thing is a very fundamental distinction that we actually apply in many cases on Shabbos. Let's say a guy is walking and he walked into some nettles on Shabbos and he got these things on his coat. You're allowed to pull them out. He's certainly not allowed to clean the coat. So that's the difference. One is called pocket, one is called low pocket. This is a general nachmina. It applies also to tikkunei gavra, not only to tikkunei coats. Even though the maisa, excuse the pun, obviously. Even though the maisa, in this case, the tikkun of the coats, the removal of the coats, is still considered to be a tikkun for it. But nonetheless, it's pocket, it's separate. Kanesh al zeitim. Im yesh kesher b'roshu mekabel tuma, v'im lav ein mekabel tuma. But ben kach vital b'shabbat. So once again, we have confusion of the issue of Shabbos and other things. So here we have a kanesh al zeitim. Of course, this involves a completely different issue. A kanesh al zeitim is the reed that you would use. Remember that they would let the olives sit for a while in order to have a little bit of heat in them from the oxidation. And then they would break down, it would be easier to get the oil out of them. And you would use a reed to poke them, and to, you know, maneuver them, move them around so that you get oxygen into it and let agitate. The whole thing agitate, yeah. So now if this kana has a kesher being a knot. We actually use the word knot in English for a piece of wood that has a knot in it. So here on a corner, you also have in places where the corner was branching, you have a knot. What the knot does is two things. First of all, it spreads the wood a bit, so the corner is wider in that point. And it also creates a stima. So basically what you end up having is a little tiny container on the top of the reed. Now on the surface, I mean, who cares? Basically we're not good using it as a container. We're using this as a poker. And here, the issue is not whether it's usable, where Rav and Abaya had their machlokas. The issue is whether it's pshute kliyates. I mean, certainly nobody's going to say that since pshute kliyates are not mekabel tuma, therefore they're not a kli on Shabbos. That's silly. You know, if I have a perfectly usable fork, but it's a wooden salad fork, It's not makabel tumah because it's shuta kliyeta. It's obviously a kli for Shabbos. That wasn't what Rav and Abai were arguing about. They were arguing about whether you're misalik your das from it to use it. So this is really not nogea, that question. But as usual, the Gemara managed to introduce the issue in advance of the Mishnah, which, as we pointed out many times, is standard. Asks the Gemara, so over here the Mishnah says that, look, in any case, it's certainly usable on Shabbos because what you're doing is okay on Shabbos. It's a kli on Shabbos, but as far as tumah is concerned, it's only going to be makabel tumah if it has a knot on top. Asks the Gemara, why would it be makabel tumah as a knot? It's still pshuta kliyetsu. Pshuta kliyetsu, any makabel tumah, even if they happen to have, I mean, they have a knot, what's the difference? Says the Gemara, in my time, Adumi to Sakbina, as we've seen many times, the Torah compares Kliyetz to Sak, and Sak is Metatum, Malavarekum, and therefore, unless the Kliyetz has a container, it's not going to be Makabel Tumah, because it's not similar to Sak. Tanim Mishmeidurim Nechemia, it is a Kli Kibah. Why? Because you use it to take samples. B'sha'ash ma'apech b'zeitim ob'chobro ebo. You poke the zeitim, but while you poke it, you get a little sample of the oil in the top where there was the pekat. So now you look at it, see whether it's ready yet for squeezing. And therefore, as a sample taker, it's perfectly valid, not only kli ma'aseh, but a mole vareikam kli.
He's dropping the whole 3 inches to the barrel?
No. I poke it. It's not a barrel, it's a pile. Yeah.
So the top is the first thing that goes into the
right, that takes a sample. It's the same type of way as we take sample from other things.
So Kahadigamishnah.
Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol HaKelim Nitalim, Chutzben HaMasar HaGadol, V'yateit Shamacharisha. Now here is the fundamental Mishnah about Muktzben Machmas Kisaren Kis. And what Rabbi Yossi seems to be saying is that you could move anything at all, well, it's not clear what that means, anything at all. We're going to see, of course, a lot about that. Except for a saw, a large saw, which is something that's used to cut logs and so on, and you don't want to have to sit there resharpening and so on. You won't use that for banging or any other purpose. And a yatecho maharesha, which is the sharp edge that cuts into the ground on your plow, and again, that is delicate, you don't want it to be bent, and so you set it aside to be used only for farm work. Amr Nach, you should know that an uchlo de katsri is no different than a yatecho maharesha dami. An uchlo de katsri, the closest we get to an uchlo de katsri is, if you remember the old days, before spray cans, you would put a little bit of starch in this container that you could shake over the shirts. It had little holes in it, and as you would shake it,
sprinkles.
Yeah, a sprinkler, right? But we don't use it anymore because of spray can. I mean, the
it's like an atomizer.
It's not like an atomizer. That's the thing.
It's like
you just let it out. It's something like a sifter, except that it's so small it's usable for liquids. So since it's delicate, because of that, it's kiyatecha maharesha. Because, I mean, the moment, if one of those holes gets too big, I mean, that's the end of it, and it doesn't, you can't use it to shake, it just leaks. And so that also is included. As we pointed out earlier, there's a wide range of what would be considered muktzah b'sharon kis, a tainus of nachman. That's no different than a farm implement. Om Rabaye, I'll give you other examples. A charva de ushkefe, or a sakina de ashkafta, or a chatzina de nagre, are all kiyatecho maharesha dami. So a charva de ushkefe, that's what you would use for leather cutting, that has to be precise. A sakina de ashkafta, Rashi learns, means a butchering knife, whereas Tosus learns it means a shchita knife. Of course, there's a big difference between how much it'd be makbed on a shchita knife and a butchering knife. And also, the other cases that we have over here is the chatzina de nagre, which is an adze that's used by a carpenter. So all of these things are close enough to being delicate that they're also considered to be the equivalent of yatecha maharesha. Tana Rabbah, Berishona hayu omrim shlosha kelim nitalim b'shabbat. We're going to see that this Berishona hayu omrim was the original gezera of Mukta back at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. And what they said was, there are precisely three things that you're allowed to use on Shabbos. Now, Tosis points out this can't mean literally three things. That obviously, simple things that have a base kibble, such as cups and platters and so on, those things were given. I mean, you're going to eat on Shabbos. We're not talking about real kelim. We're talking about instruments. This is a very important nekuda. Because instruments are related to the idea of malacha. See, this introduces a new concept, because according to Rambam, the main subject of Mukta is, again, believe it or not, our good old standby, Hotzaha. You're going to start moving kelim, you'll move them from place to place, you'll end up being Motzim Rishus Rishus, and since, as we've seen, there's nothing else in Shabbos but Motzim Rishus Rishus. Oh yes, there were another few malachas, but therefore, Mukta is an extension of that fundamental din. According to the way Tosfos is learning over here, that we should understand kol hakelim meaning instruments, and this makes a great deal of sense, because the original Hakapada in Ezra Nehemiah was not only on Hotzah. So the original Hakapada was a restoration of the Chumrah of Shabbos in every sense. Hotzah, but also instrumentation. If I'm going to start using now tools, tools are what you do malacha with. Yes, it's true, tools are also what you do butchering with, or what you do cutting your challah with, and so on, but it's too close. So therefore they said, look, we'll be matir three tools that are very needed for normal living on Shabbos, but that's all. You could use a maktsoa shodveila, which is the how do they translate it? Give a word to a maktsoa there in English?
Not a hatchet.
No, it's a cutter. The dveila, remember, was pressed dates that were very, very tightly pressed. You couldn't cut a piece of it unless you were able to use this maktsoa.
Which is like a serrated knife?
No, it's not a knife. It's closer to a hatchet device.
What, a cleaver?
A cleaver, yes. A maktsoa is a cleaver, thanks.
The knife used for cutting dates.
No, okay. And of course you're going to need to be able to use your Listerine bottle, because otherwise you're going to have horrible breath. And that Zuamod Listerine, I mean, it's certainly, oh wait a minute, maybe that's not what it is. So the Zuamod Listerine was actually surprisingly was a clea that was used for skimming the top off of a soup or off of a stew. Because you get a real disgusting layer on top of fat and so on. So it's a skimmer. And that they allowed you to use. And they allowed you to use a table knife. I mean, you got to be able to use your steak knife to be able to eat. So sakin ktana shagabe ashulchan, those were the three and the only three things you could use on Shabbos. Those were the days, my friend. No. You'll manage
with
that.
They have a base kibble,
a spoon, but not a fork.
Well,
then he tiru, they were matir more. The chazru be tiru, then they were matir even more. The chazru be tiru, they were matir even more than that. Okay, we're going to go through each one of these steps. Hacha amru, kol hakelim nitonu b'shabes, chutz ben ha'masar ha'gadol v'yatecho ma'charesha. Until they finally got to Rabbi Yossi in our mission. Now, can we trace the steps? Because, of course, as we trace the steps, we also end up with what's really meant by kol hakelim nitolim b'shabbos. Because, I mean, do we mean letzarech mekomam? Do we mean micham letzel? Do we mean kolushim lach l'yisr, kolushim lach l'eter? There might be a lot of steps that you got to get to, or there might be fewer steps, in which case more remains usher. So let's see how to trace it. Rabbi said it means like this. They first started off, first heter was, they were matir dover shemalachto laheter letzarach gufa. So they said, look, if the kli is generally used for heter, you can use it. And then chazru v'yitiru, they were even matir dover shemalachto laheter letzarach mekomo. Even if you don't need the kli itself, but you want to move it because you need the place where the kli is, They were matir that also. And then they were chazer v'tiru even more. They were matir even a davar shemalach l'yeser, as long as it's the tzorah gufa, but not if it's the tzorah mekomo. And of course, that remained in effect, and still there was one more step, which was adayin biyado achat in b'shtei yadav lo. This would be only something that was easily used and manipulated, not if it was a major thing that you needed to carry with two hands and so on. And then atcha amru, which was the last step, atcha amru, kol hakelim nitonim b'shabbos, hafilu b'shtei yadayin. Now that means, according to Abaya, we remain with a kli shemalach to the iser remains in effect, letzorach mekomo, correct? Because they were never matir that. And the only thing they were matir was the letzorach gufa. Now we haven't seen any heter on mechamel itself. Okay. Says Rava, now wait a second, I don't like that, because it seems to me that the differentiation between the tzarech gufo and the tzarech mekomo is an artificial one. Because it's true that there's a difference in terms of the kli. Yes, I understand what you're saying, that in one case I'm using the kli, and in one case I have no need for the kli. But I don't understand why that's an issue. What we're talking about is what you need, not what the kli needs. So what difference does it make to me in terms of the steps necessary to be matir the use of a kli? Why should I think that there's a greater heter in the use of the kli than there is in the moving of the kli to use the place of the kli? Why is the focus the kli at all? I don't understand. The focus is the use of a person. I need this place now. Move the kli out of the way. I need to use my nutcracker now. So move the nutcracker to crack the nut. Seems to be the same thing. Ela amar Rava. Therefore, says Rava, mali tzarech gufa, mali tzarech mekomo, that's the same level of usage. Therefore, I say, step one was, itiro davar shemalach l'heter. And once they're matir davar shemalach l'heter, it doesn't matter whether it's a tzarech gufa or whether it's a tzarech mekomo. So that's the first step. Then they were chozav v'yitir even on a kli shemalach l'heter to move it out of the rain on Shabbos, or to move it out of the sun on Shabbos, b'yitir l'cham l'tzel, which according to Abaye, was never mutter, even on a kli shemalach l'heter. Then they went ahead, and they were matir, chozav v'yitiro, even a kli shemalach l'yeser, both with tzarech gufa and tzarech mekomo, because according to me, there is no difference between tzarech gufa and tzarech mekomo. So that was the stage, the penultimate stage, and then adayin, but not mechamel itself, of course, and a dying ba'adam echad, only something that could be moved by one person, b'shnei b'nei adam lo, ad shamru kol hakelim nitonim b'shabbos afilu b'shnei b'nei adam. Now that means that we're left with a major machlokes between Rav and Abaye as to the meaning in our Mishnah. We said kol hakelim nitonim. Meaning what? Kol hakelim nitonim. Yes, even if you need two people to move it, but not cases of Michal Matzel on the Klish Malachto Liyasser, but everything else, yes. According to Abaye, oh no. First of all, you need two people to move it, no. Two hands to move it, yes. Furthermore, if it's Michal Matzel, even if it's Malachto Liyasser, you can't use it. And furthermore, if it's a Klish Malachto Liyasser, Litzorg Mekomo even, you wouldn't be allowed to move it. This is a major machlokas, what we mean, Kol HaKelim. I mean, kol ha-kelim chutz mi the masar. I mean, certainly it doesn't seem to be the right way to say it according to Abaye. So, eis ve'abaye, how about the famous case of meduka? Im yesh ba shum metatalim otah, v'im lav ein metatalim otah. Excuse me. How do you explain the fact that you're not allowed to move a mortar unless it has some garlic in it? Can you explain that to me? Why can't I move it? Why, according to you, I can even move it in the tzarech mekomo. Who cares if it's a kli shabbat l'yisr? You, Rava, hold that there's no problem moving the tzarech mekomo? Answers, Rava, the case would be, what are we talking about? We're talking about mechamel etzel. Mechamel etzel, it's the same metatel, a kli shabbat l'yisr, mechamel etzel. which according to me, says Rava, would be mutter in Kli Shema Kol Ha'Etzer. Therefore, we want to adopt to explain what it means. Now, obviously, Rava, Abaye, answered this in Rava's place before. It's the same question we asked before, the beginning of the Sugya, and he says it was going according to Rav Netanya. That's because the Mashmaut, according to him, was a mitzvah for any purpose. Okay? Eisvei. Explain to me what is the problem of using a pestle for cutting meat over. What's the problem? Now you're saying everybody's motive, but it's motive. It doesn't mean you can move it. Why can't you move it? No, we'll have to say it's all starting about Mikham Latzel. Otherwise, why couldn't I move it? If I need its place, I'll move it out of the way. Om Reb Chanina. Reb Chanina says, you know, excuse me, gentlemen, you don't understand the history of Muktzah. If you understood the history of Muktzah, there's a way out of all of this. The truth is that the various steps, our Mishnah, that is the result of a long history. When we said that Brishona, you omrim, Shlosha, Kelim, Nitalim, Bishavas, that was the original Mishnah of Mukta, and that was said at the time of Nechemiah. Bimei Nechemiah ben Chichlaya Nishnet Mishnah Zo, Dechti, Bayamim Ha'ema. What happened over there? Bayamim Ha'ema Ra'iti Biyuda Dorchim Gitot B'Shabbat, Umeviim Ha'arimot, Bamsim Alak Hamorim, and so on and so forth. It was a disaster. So therefore, they made this takana not even to use normal keli. Once that's true, Omer Reb Elazar, there are many Mishnayot, including some that you've been asking, that are simply Mishnayot that are remnants of those days. You can't ask from a case of the Meducha, for instance. That was said in the interim period, at the time that Muktzah was much more chomer, before the Chazar V'Tiru, Chazar V'Tiru, Chazar V'Tiru. So the truth is, the Mishnah about the Kanim on the Lechem HaPanim and the Maklot on the Shkitat HaPesach and Erev Shabbos and the Gelustra, which we'll see later on, and the Meducha, which you've been talking about, and you keep bothering everybody with that Mishnah, Kulam Kodem HaTarat Kelim Nishnu. All of those things were said before the Heter of the Kelim that's reflected in our Mishnah. Once our Mishnah was said, you can forget about that whole business about the Ali and the Meducha. What am I referring to? The case of the Maklot that I'm referring to is the Mishnah of the Maklot Dakin Chalakin Hayusham. The Kanim Ditznan Lo Sidura Kanim Velo Netilatam Dochet HaShabbat. What they would do is they would have these half straws. There was a straw that was cut lengthwise that would allow for air to pass between the Lechem HaPonim, because you had six on top, one on top of the other, six high, and you needed to have air circulating. And the best way to have the air circulating was to maintain the weight of the challah above on a half of a straw, which would allow the air to pass between. Now, this is a very strong construction, because you've got basically a circle. The top of the circle is touching the lechem above it, but, I mean, that doesn't preclude the air. It's a very tiny point of contact. And you've got 2 points of contact on the part underneath, with air flowing in between. So that keeps things nice and fresh. But you couldn't move it on Shabbos, because it wasn't a kli nitzel on Shabbos, so they would come in Erev Shabbos, take out the kanim, for one day nothing would happen, and take them golfing off on Shabbos. Now, obviously, there's nothing wrong with moving it on Shabbos by our standards of Kalim. Because I now need to take down the Lechem, so why can't I move out the Kanim? But by their standards, which were the standards of Nechemiah, this wasn't one of the things that was about to move on Shabbos. So they weren't much, or even the Beit HaMikdash. They would come in before Shabbos and remove it. But don't let that confuse you, because it's not a contemporary Mishnah. It's a recessive Mishnah, still from the early days. The other case, Maklot Titznan, Maklot Dakin v'Chalakin Ayusham, u'meni chalak tefov al ketev chaveiro v'tuleu mafshit. So what they would do is, on Erev Pesach, on a Chol, on a non-Shabbos day, they would have these thin pieces that you could support on your shoulder, a pole, basically. You would support one end on your shoulder, one end on your friend's shoulder, hang the lamb in between you, and that way you could work on the skinning and the preparation for the Pesach. But what would you do if it came on Shabbos? So it says, Rabbi Elazar, Arbaas, Shakaliyos, and Shabbos, Minir Yado Ketev Chaviro, Viyat Chaviro Ketefo, you'd have to dedicate one of your hands for holding up the lamb by putting it on your friend's shoulder, because after all, these poles are mukta. Now, by our standards, these poles aren't mukta. What are they? They're just kalim that I want to use for heter. Why can't I support something on them? So the idea, therefore, is that this was also a recessive Mishnah now, going back to the days of the Chemra.
And
right, they asked sometimes if they asked shvus. This was an emergency. There were like a general shvus. There were times in which they would actually go and ask them. Okay, we'll go. We'll see tomorrow the additional cases. We've already gone over our time here. Some of our esteemed audience in South Africa was rather upset by the fact that we go on so long. Why don't we bring it down? They don't care about that. Right. They want the original pace. The original pace was like 25 to 40 minutes. So when I wasn't here and we put up the other topic, they said, now wait a minute. Why isn't it that way all the time?
Academic hour.
That was the conclusion.
Yeah, but you're all, it's amazing how everybody like knows everyone. You've got these images. It's amazing. Yeah. But I got to tell you all, without Richie is definitely everyone's favorite.
Is that the word? Yeah.